you know, while I was waiting for you this evening, I thought I'm going to chat with ChatGPT. And I asked ChatGPT, do you know about the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast? What do you think it says?
It said no. Of course I don't know about it.
It said yes. It said the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast is hosted by Joe Devine and Adam Richmond.
Oh, that's a deep.
But it did put my name first, though.
Of course it did. That's cut. That's cut to the quick. I think because I always, when I wrote the entries, I'd always defer to Joe Devine first. And also probably ChatGTP knows more about Joe Devine than it does about me.
It is possible that that's the case. I can find that out in a second, actually. That's a good one to find out. It says, each week they dive into a film that they've both seen before, but somehow forgotten over time. The show mixes discussions about cinema, memory, and pop culture, while also incorporating playful segments like recasting characters and guessing film budgets. The episodes are lighthearted and humorous, with an emphasis on the hosts' chemistry and the fun banter between them. You don't need to have seen the movies they discuss to enjoy the podcast, but watching them beforehand does add another layer of engagement.
How in Christ does it know that?
It searched 5 different websites to find this out.
But that I've never written anything about that in the text about us. Who's saying that unless ChatGPT is listening?
Well, this is what I thought. So I said, can you tell me where you found this information, please? And it listed a few websites. And then it said, it mentioned comments and reviews. So I said, can you find any commentary from listeners? There are a couple of reviews on things I hadn't seen before. One of them was very funny.
Wait a minute, please. I'm feeling good, right? Don't tell me.
They're not bad. They're not bad.
Yeah, but last time you read a review out to my face, I fucking died.
Trust me. This is the best. I think it's the best review our podcast could ever get, which is reviews for this show are pointless because if you haven't enjoyed this podcast, you've probably listened to it at the wrong time.
Oh, man alive. Whoever wrote that.
A genius.
Yeah, can you know,
genius
that's
for that. Anyway, I then thought, okay, well, based on the premise of the podcast that you know about, can you suggest some films that might have been, you know, quote, forgotten movies that would be good episodes? One of them, and I won't say what it is, one of them is a film I know you to have watched yesterday.
Oh, fuck off.
So it's just very, yeah,
I know
it's,
to
it's
you,
very on
I
the
know
nose.
You to have watched.
I know you to have watched yesterday. But the films are very on point. And yeah, there's a couple in here that, what one I will mention because it's one that I don't think either of us would ever put on our lists because we love it, but it's that perfect middle ground Venn diagram oversight, Gattaca. And it even says, no. Gattaca, why it's a good fit. No. I know we wouldn't pick it. I'm just saying.
You say what it says, and then I'm going to absolutely tear it to shreds.
ChatGPT says, why it's a good fit. This cerebral sci-fi film starring Ethan Hawke and Jude Law was critically acclaimed and influential at the time, but it's not often discussed in mainstream movie conversations. Its themes of genetic engineering and identity feel especially relevant today, though.
Do you know what?
What?
It is absolutely bang on that film is not discussed, and if anything it's a outrage that it knows that and that people aren't discussing it. Why the fuck aren't people discussing Gattaca on a daily basis?
I think we should in honor of ChatGPT, we should do an OpenAI episode,
mate,
where the film was picked by ChatGPT and it's Gattaca.
I haven't seen Gattaca in so long. I absolutely adore that film, or adored. Maybe it's waned for.
No, it hasn't. I watched it 2 years ago. It's still really good. It's going to come up in conversation on today's episode because it's a good story that goes follows a character over a long period of time, albeit with flashbacks.
Yeah, we'll have to park that.
Cool.
Horrifying stuff. Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast. With me, according to artificial intelligence, the co-host of the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast. But we all know humans with blood and muscle and hearts and minds. We all know, I am the host.
Yeah. You're the host for the rotting flesh amongst us.
Yes.
And I'm the host for everyone made of silicon.
I am the Cronenbergian host of the Movies You Forgot podcast. And joining me, as ever, is the James Cameron of co-hosts. It is a synthetic AI, bodged, scary, evil monster of a machine who forgets things. He goes back in time. He doesn't even know who he's supposed to kill because he's forgotten it. It's Mr. Joe Devine.
I am very blue, though, you know, so there's that.
Rude blue or face blue?
I mean, rude blue, face blue, and sort of feels blue as well, you know?
God.
I'm all the different Cameron? James Cameron. I'm all the different Cameron blues.
Your bloody emotions are in an abyss, aren't they?
Absolutely, man. I need one of them deep sea machines to go down and get them.
Yeah, your life was like a big sturdy boat crossing the ocean, and then it hit a giant iceberg called having the gallbladder out.
Yeah,
and you've fucked. You've fucked ever since.
5 of my 16 compartments are flooded. You know,
you're depressed. You're boring. Yep. Your chat's rubbish.
That's it.
And your film's
everyone in the engine room is going to die.
Yeah, and now all you want to do is make the same film over and over again.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Avatar, you want to have the same conversation over and over again. I'm struggling to see where the analogy breaks down there. But it's lovely to talk to you. How's it going?
Oh, great, man. Just terrific. And you?
Sorry. I just sort of said your life is in the shit. And I was expecting you to be perky about it. On today's episode, we're going to go straight into it. On today's episode, we are doing the 2008 David Fincher-directed flick, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Benjamin Button?
Yeah, you know, they're from... because it's all based in New Orleans.
That's true.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I'll be doing...
That is true.
I'll be doing a slightly worse accent than everyone else in this film.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Their accent is pretty shit, and I'm going to do an even worse one, which is saying something, because...
Yeah.
Come on, let's get it on record. The accents in this shit stink.
I didn't even really notice that anyone was doing one, to be honest. I enjoyed the film. But go on, what does the letterbox say?
So the letterbox says, the headline is, this film is 166 minutes. Okay, that's the headline.
That's the headline.
2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That's the headline.
That's long, yeah.
I logged my Letterboxd review for this before we're recording it. And listener, Nathan Hardy, a lovely guy on the Letterboxd. I love seeing his reviews, what he's watched. He just commented under that. He said, this isn't a forgot you forgot, is it? Pleadingly, you know, because he obviously likes to watch the films.
Sure.
And I had to dissuade him of that notion. I said, yeah, unfortunately it is. I'm sorry.
Can I just say as well, I like to imagine that, you know, you would keep some sort of mystery about what was and wasn't. But in that instance, I can also imagine a scenario where there's no way that you would allow a random person on the internet to think for a second that you just watched The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. You had to respond and say, of course it is an episode for the podcast. I would never watch this of my own accord. That's kind of what happened, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, I'm not going to be coy about it. I'm not going to go, I'm not ever telling. It's like, yeah, of course I am. This is what happens.
I'm not ever telling.
These are the perks.
Sure.
Follow me at Error of Ways, Ways on Letterboxd.
Guess what?
You'll get a little snifter of maybe what we'll be covering on the podcast. Ooh, weeks ahead sometimes.
If you feel like what's missing from your experience of the show is a snifter, then do follow Adam Richmond at Error of Ways on Letterboxd. He will follow you back.
it's lucky I've had my two cans.
Already?
Yeah, no cans for the rest.
Before the 45-hour show starts.
Yeah, and I'll just be drinking water for the whole show.
Oh.
But like I'm at the ABV that Another Round recommends, like right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. and then you're going to dilute that over time with the water.
Yeah. And when I'm not slightly buzzed, I feel like I'm a pretty good guy. I think people like me at work. They respond to me. So even as I come down, ABV-wise, I think I'm going to sustain a level of like perk and wit and interest.
I agree.
Yeah. So I think.
No, I completely agree. I'm laughing at the sentence. I think people like me at work. You know, I think they do as well. I've never thought about you needing the drink. People don't like you, but do you know, maybe you have.
I'm worried now. I think I'm going to start drinking before I go to work, just to make sure. Because I can't be sure. And the only way to make sure is if I have cans throughout the day.
Oh dear!
Oh, anyway, let's dig in.
What does it say? What's the letterbox?
The letterboxed
Benjamin Bouton.
Lovely edit point there. Life isn't measured in minutes, but in moments. Oh. So that's the bit in caps.
I measure mine in hours and days usually, and then years depending on the perspective, but never moments.
No.
Sometimes 7-year stretches, we've done that, but never moments. Have you ever measured your life in moments?
I'm not measuring my life at all.
Well, because moments are also all different unit sizes, aren't they? I mean, one moment isn't equivalent to another. So I could understand looking at moments, thinking about moments, and thinking that was an interesting moment, that was an important moment. But they're all of different sizes. So if you were trying to measure anything, it would be like trying to draw up the measurements for some new curtains by combining four different types of measurement.
But then maybe I think there's suggesting at the end of your life, that's fine, because you take all these differently spaced moments, some tiny and some not so tiny, and you stack them all up against each other. And it's saying to you, the man who would query the measurement system, they're going, well, there's a cunt who measured his life in minutes. You know, right, he's not measuring his life in moments. We're moments. Moments span time. And we are bigger or smaller.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, no, fair enough. You've won me over.
Born under unusual circumstances, Benjamin Button. Yeah. I mean, the circumstances aren't unusual.
No, they're
the
not.
The circumstances
at all.
Are very, very usual. He comes out of a woman's vagina, like we all do.
Yeah. Well, look, actually, some people come out through a cesarean surgical incision. So, and they're still people. You're not saying they're not, but you're sort of excluding them, though, by saying that everyone comes out of the vaginal canal.
Yeah, if you don't, then very suspicious. Born under unusual circumstances, no, here's the first caveat, not very, very usual.
On the last day of the Great War, the day the Great War ended, that's about as unusual as the circumstances are.
Otherwise, usual, textbook.
All normal.
Normal.
Textbook. Yeah.
From the downstairs, out of a lady, Benjamin Button springs into being as an elderly man in a New Orleans nursing home and ages in reverse. Okay, for starters, he doesn't spring into anything, and he's not an elderly man, he's an old baby.
Sure.
Fuck's sake. First thing why I hate this letterboxd, and I also hate this film.
Yeah.
12
years. Here it is, though, for anyone who hasn't, just very quickly, he's born old. And he ages backwards, yeah? That's the film.
No, but it's not just that. It's not just he's born old. He's born old as a baby. So he is a baby, but he just happens to have a very wrinkly face.
Well, it's more complicated than that, but yeah.
No, it's not, because this is based on the short story by F. Scott Fitzgerald of the same name. It's not called F. Scott Fitzgerald. It's called The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Who came out in unusual circumstances as downstairs of a lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get to the short story, because I just read it.
We're not going to get anywhere at this rate.
No, we're not. This is perfect. We're going to age backwards.
The people listening are very much aging forwards.
He is, in the short story, I've got what you're caveating what it is about. In the short story, he is born as an old man.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you know that?
Yeah.
It's an old man in imagine, you know, when
he can walk and talk already. I know, but we're going to get to that.
Wait a sec. I want you to imagine something. Imagine the maternity ward. Yeah. You know, in that bit in the movies where they've got all the babies in those little pods. Yeah. It's also, it's not told in the first person, and this film is with voiceover, but the dad arrives and he looks in that kind of room and there's an old man where a baby would be. So it's a different tone, right?
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Good. 12 years after his birth.
Okay, right.
Button. Can we call him Button or should we call him Benjamin?
I'm going to call him Brad Pitt, probably.
Brad Pitt meets Daisy, a child who flits in and out of his life as she grows up to be a dancer. Though he has all sorts of unusual adventures over the course of his life, it is his relationship with Daisy and the hope that they will come together at the right time. Ooh, they come together at the right time, all right. That drives Benjamin forward. Oh, they come together. Good times. They do end up having sex. So Bradley Pitt plays Benjamin Buttons. Kate Blanchett plays Daisy Fuller. And then you've got some pretty good actors elsewhere. You've got Taraji P. Henson as Queenie, who plays the mum who looks after Benjamin. She's pretty good. Julia Ormond is very good as the daughter of a dying Kate Blanchett. Jason Fleming of Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrel fame. Mahershala Ali. Jared Harris from Mad Men is very good in this. And of course, we'll get to her at some point, but Tilda Swinton does pop up. She is cursed. I'm cursed by her and she is cursed to be on this podcast. A lot of times.
Sure.
So, sorry if that was all a little bit muddled and confused. It's a very muddled and confused film. Joe, you got me on this. I'm not as angry as I should be because even though it's very, very long, I was never livid or annoyed at having to sit through and watch it. But I did find it to be a broadly shit film.
Oh, yeah?
Tell me about your curious case of the Benjamin Buttons.
Well, listen, I've told you this already, and we've agreed to not spend 2 hours, 45 minutes just arguing the point. But I enjoyed watching this film today, and I know that you didn't. So I think it's just worth getting that out there, okay?
Oh, well, a slight little pushback. I didn't not enjoy it.
Right.
I think it is objectively quite a shit film.
Right.
It passed 2 hours and 45 minutes of my life. But I didn't resent it. I could imagine another time feeling quite angry at having to spend that time watching what I think is a fairly pointless movie. But it was fine. And I'm going to jump ahead. At the ending, I'm not going to say what happens at the end. It made me feel something at the end.
Did it?
I'm going to give the film, and maybe we won't come back to it. But I felt a little tweak behind the old eyeballs.
Wow.
A little, hello, am I feeling sad about something?
It got you going.
It got me, didn't get me going. Well, we've discussed this before. It opened a doorway.
Yeah, but that's what I was saying. You said it got you going, and I said, what, you were crying? And you said, no, it just got me, you know. I was like, well, that's not getting you going. Going is crying. You know, you've changed sides of that argument.
Oh, okay.
That's fine.
I'll do that all the time. I'll do that
all
day. You've
come around to my way of thinking. That's what you're saying.
Whatever you say, I'll say the opposite.
Fine. And then in a year's time. Yeah. No, that's okay. That's fine. Look, I liked it, right? I agree with you. It's not it's not a great film, okay? I think it's fine. I think it's not as bad. I don't think it's as bad as you do by the sounds of it. But I totally understand what you mean. I think, you know, it's obviously not a classic. It is a bit of a failure, given the resource that's gone into it, the actors that are in it, you know, what it could have been, potentially. However, while it is silly and two-dimensional, and it does look funny, it's got a nice vibe to it at times. I like old America. You know, I like that. I like following a character over a long period of time. And in this film, obviously, the film spans the entire life of Benjamin Button. So I enjoyed that. I like the sort of novelish little vignettes that pop up. I think they are more relevant to the core story and to the meaning that the film is trying to convey than these sorts of things tend to be in other films. But what I really like about it is not the film's doing. You've referenced it already. It's based on a short story by F. Scott Fitzgerald. What I like most about it is the idea of someone aging backwards, because I think it's like the perfect sci-fi story conceit, for example, because it allows, you know, someone to be an outsider in their own world. And it allows that character and us as the audience to experience their life and the world they live in differently than everyone else in that world, despite the fact that that person is from the world. So it's a really nice function to get a different take on things. And I think that's one of the reasons why I would give the film a bit more credit, I think, than you would.
Does it not annoy you, though? The film never really clarifies the rules of it. So to say the word sci-fi, I immediately think, well,
I'm not saying this is a sci-fi
But you said the word sci-fi, so then I'm just not to deflect and not to. Uh-huh. I've asked you to keep reminding me if ever I'm trying to beat you in an argument or make you think what I think to say.
You want me to keep you honest?
Yeah, just stop doing that, Adam. I do it. I've done it historically in my life. I've pushed people away. It's not an attractive character trait. I can't help it. I don't feel like I'm trying to convince. When I'm saying it,
you think for people at work like you.
Yeah, but they don't.
You're right.
So when I'm in my head, I'm thinking I'm just saying what I think. But historically, I feel like it's always ever sounded like I'm trying to change someone's mind, and that must be reality, right? I have to accept that reality. Because it would be insane not to, because that has happened time and time again. So keep me honest, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to grow as a person.
Okay.
But
let's grow together.
Does it not niggle at you that they don't really ever define the rules? The beginning of the short story is he's an old man, and also he has the mind of an old man. Can I just read one excerpt from the intro of the story?
I'd love you first, before you do that, to say, just in two sentences or something, what happens in the short story. Because it's, you know, the plot on Wikipedia of that is very short. I think it would be valuable for the listener to hear that before they hear an excerpt.
The plot of the short story is an old man gets born in very unusual circumstances. He gets taken home by his dad. There is no mention of the mum at all. He behaves like an old man and has the mind of an old man. And the tone, it's important to say what the tone is, because the tone is broadly comic. And it's everyone kind of broadly accepts that there's an old man who should be a baby. And there's scenes where the dad's got to think about, well, what clothes should I buy this baby? He's an old man. And that's basically how it continues until Benjamin Button is 50, but maybe 18 in the story. He falls in love.
I think 20, because he's 70 when he's born, I think.
Okay, whatever. It's out of whack. He falls in love with a woman who is called, what is she called? Something like Rudiger or something really. Hildegard. And he's as swept away with her as Brad is with Cate Blanchett in the movie.
Yeah.
He's obviously an old guy and she's a young lady. He's not really, he appears to be an old guy, but isn't. Anyway, everyone frowns upon it, but she's into old guys, is what she says. They get married and then they have a son. They age in different directions, and that's all fine. And then she looks older than he does. And then he starts thinking, oh, she's old. I'm not as attracted to her as I was, which is fantastic. Really tells you a lot.
Yeah.
And so he struggles. Before then, he can't get into university because he looks old. There's something about a war he goes on to.
He goes to war.
But like, it just rattles through it. Like, nothing sticks.
Uh-huh.
And then things get awkward. He's deeply unattracted to his aging wife. Uh-huh. His son starts to get older than he is.
Doesn't his son have a son, and he goes to preschool with his grandson?
And yeah, that's the end of the story.
Right. Yeah. And just to be clear, for people who haven't watched this film but are listening to this episode, that is not the film. That's nothing like the film. The only thing from that the film takes is the idea of a character being born old and aging backwards, right? And it doesn't even really take that, which is, I think, is about what you're about to say.
It is completely different. To call this an adaptation of the short story is a real push. So this is how the story begins. Blah, 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 blah. The dad is looking at the baby. Mr. Button's eyes followed her pointing finger, and this is what he saw. Wrapped in a voluminous white blanket and partly crammed into one of the cribs, there sat an old man, apparently about 70 years old. His sparse hair was almost white, and from his chin dripped a long, smoke-coloured beard. So the baby's got a beard, which waved absurdly back and forth, fanned by the breeze coming in at a window. He looked up at Mr. Button with dim, faded eyes in which lurked a puzzled question. "Am I mad?" thundered Mr. Button, his terror resolving into rage. "Is this some ghastly hospital joke?" "It doesn't seem like a joke to us," replied the nurse severely, "and I don't know whether you're mad or not, but that is most certainly your child." And then the old man just says, jump ahead, he goes... The old man turned wearily to the nurse. "Nice way to welcome a newborn child," he complained in a weak voice. "Tell him he's wrong, why don't you?" So the baby old man is an old man and he's talking like an old man.
He's sassy already.
He's sassy instantly. He wants a cane. He likes to smoke a cigar.
Sure.
The film junks all of that. And we've got instant weird old baby.
Uh-huh.
He's got an aged wisdom mind, but he doesn't know anything.
You're talking about the film now.
Yeah, we could jump to the film.
Oh, right. Yeah, he doesn't know anything. No, he's, for all intents and purposes, he is a normal person, bar a couple of things, who looked old at the beginning but was the size of a baby in order to be born on a film. And then he looks really young at the end before he dies. But he gets dementia, right? So, the inside is all like a normal human aging in the right direction. It's just the outside is going the other way. That's the film. Whereas the book is very much more literal than that, right?
Yeah, the simplicity of that short story, I don't understand what they gain from having him being born like that.
Well, they gain a film. If they didn't have that, there isn't a film, right?
There is, because there's the comedic tone of that. It's kind of like a Walter Mitty fantasy. It's like a Big Fish. I've not seen Big Fish, but it's more like a yarn or a fable.
I need to interrupt you to tell you something here now, though, because you're stepping on something which I was going to raise anyway. It's very interesting that you raise that point about the comic element to the story, because I've got a description here of the long journey that this film, this, you know, idea took from originally being picked, the rights being picked up, to eventually a film being made. I'd love to walk you through it, because the first part of it is very relevant to what you're saying. Okay, so, and this is from the Wikipedia page about the film. Producer Ray Stark bought the film rights to do The Curious Case of Benjamin Button in the mid-1980s. So that's the first... That's the first part of the timeline here. And it was optioned by Universal Pictures. The first choice to direct it was Frank Oz, with Martin Short attached for the title role.
Yes.
Right, so that was the first ever imagination of this. And I am imagining that is far closer to the short story that you're talking about now than the film that eventually ends up being made, which couldn't be more different from that project, right?
Who next?
Well, so next it changes completely, because in 1991 the film was optioned by Steven Spielberg. Yeah, with Tom Cruise attached for the lead role. But Spielberg left the project to direct Jurassic Park in 1993. What could have been, huh? And also Schindler's List.
We dodged a bullet there, didn't we?
In October 1998, screenwriter Robin Swickord wrote for director Ron Howard an adapted screenplay of the short story. A project which would potentially star actor John Travolta.
I don't like that. I like Ron Howard, I like for this film.
Mm-hmm. Why'd you say that?
Well, because he's got the schmaltz and the grit and he knows about special effects.
And his Arrested Development voiceover would have been better than Brad Pitt's. Is that what you think? Benjamin Button didn't know but he was aging backwards. And that's the story. The family. Yeah?
Buongiorno. Nice sweater.
Ron Howard reads this, chats to Tom Hanks about it, and Tom Hanks thinks, oh yeah, maybe that, but I'd rather do one where I age forwards. And they land on Forrest Gump, and he gets Forrest Gump, and he does the same film but forwards.
In May 2000, Paramount hired screenwriter Jim Taylor.
He wrote Sideways.
Collaborated with Alexander Payne. Wrote Sideways, yeah.
Okay, so this is the guy who could have done the tone. I can see a guy like that.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Smashing the tone here.
The studio also attached director Spike Jones to help helm the project.
Yeah, I'd take a Spike Jones version of this.
Screenwriter, you're about to come yourself now, okay? You're about to come all over
Charlie
yourself.
Charlie Kaufman.
Screenwriter Charlie Kaufman had also written a draft of the adapted screenplay at one point.
I would love to read that. Anyone out there who's got their hands on Charlie Kaufman's Curious Case of Benjamin Button, I don't know how you can get it to me.
I know. Letterboxed, error of ways.
No,
just copy movies, it in a bunch of comments.
Movies you forgot at gmail.com.
That's right. The email address you have access to but never check. Mm. You could please send it there.
That'll I'll start checking it now.
In June 2003, director Gary Ross entered final negotiations to helm the project based on a new draft that was written by Eric Roth.
Okay, yeah, who ends up final screenplay credit and also wrote Forrest Gump.
And then in 2004, David Fincher entered negotiations, but later in 2014, Peter Jackson claimed to have been offered the film 5 or 6 years before as well, but turned it down. Fascinating. I'd love to get more of that in the Movies You Forgot You Forgot podcast, Adam. I'm interested in that sort of thing, the journey of the project to fruition, because there's so many different possibilities there, isn't there? And imagine being like on that sort of, you know, somewhat throughout, and at times thinking, oh my God, Kaufman's going to do it, and then it ends up not being that. Yeah, it'd be very disappointing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but ultimately your source is Wikipedia, so someone could just find this out. Like, we want to, you know what, you want to get the juice that isn't necessarily as freely available.
Right, yeah.
Like,
and that's why you know about podcasts.
Well, you know about podcasts, don't tear yourself
sure.
down.
And that's why you should listen to me. I don't want to say anything that anyone else could possibly already know or have easy access to information, because what I offer here is something so specific and unique. Like, what I actually offer is a behind-the-scenes insight, because I work in the film industry, so I have access to privileged information. Sometimes it's not that. It's more just that I want to give the information that's so niche that no one cares about, that no one would ever look for, or it's just a bit harder to find in the public eye because it's not the first step through. I've listened to other famous people and people who do know talk about it, and now I want to say it on here instead. But I don't want to just take what's on Wikipedia, even if it's interesting, because I don't have the personality to add anything around it.
Oh my God.
To transform it from just what it was into something else.
I'm very sorry. No, but I've listened to the commentaries. I've listened to the director's commentaries, and, you know, I've written more films.
They're not publicly available at all. They're not, you know, it's not like anyone could just get those.
No, you have to listen to them. There aren't, no one's transcribed those and put them on Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I bet they have.
Well, not yet.
All I'm saying is that all you're saying is the freely available, accessible to anyone stuff that you get is a bit harder to get than the freely accessible, available to anyone stuff that I get. And therefore, there's an implied difference in value, right? That's what you're saying.
That is what I'm saying. I didn't realise.
Sure, yeah.
Do you know what? I didn't realise that's what I was saying. And now you've said it so laboriously out loud, I feel humbled. You've kept me honest. You've kept me
sure,
honest.
Yeah, yeah.
This is why people drop out of my life. So that's a rich old history. Out of all those directors, who would you think pick one director that you want to see?
Spielberg.
Spielberg. You want to see Spielberg do this?
Because I think Spielberg does you know, something a little closer to what the film eventually was, tonally speaking, than what the original short story was. But he would do it the best, If Spielberg was attached to it and thought he could do it, it's in there to be done, right?
Which year Spielberg is this? This is 1990, Jurassic Park.
Well, see, this is the thing. The reason he dropped out was to do Jurassic Park, which released in 1993. So it would have been that era. Right. It would have been Jurassic Park era Spielberg.
It would be pre that.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, Spielberg has done some stinkers. He's not perfect.
Sure. No, not saying he is. But he's got the eye, you know.
You see, the year before that, he's come off two stinkers. Always and Hook.
Right.
Mawkish.
I love Hook.
Oh, come on.
Hook's great.
Oh, God.
Hook is a cult favourite amongst people of my generation.
Okay, but...
I really like it, and I think it's an absolutely fine film. Like, it's not a stinker by any means.
But if he's applying Hook and Always goggles, it's going to be Mawkish Tripe, okay? That's when he's in the Mawkish Tripe era.
I quite like Mawkish Tripe, though.
Okay, but...
I don't, that's sort of what I'm saying. Like, I don't have any problem with Mawkish Tripe. I'm a fan of Mawkish Tripe. That's why I like this film.
Didn't it annoy you when he's aged backwards, he's experienced so much, and then when he gets it to peak Button, he's on a motorcycle, he's finally syncing up with Daisy, played by Kate Blanchett, and they're finally fucking and they're getting on and they're living together.
Shake it up, baby, now go shake it up, baby.
The Beatles are happening and they're painting and they're painting their house, but they're painting each other. They're goofing around.
Yes.
No one's ever done that in life. And yet you see it in sitcoms and apparently you see it in bloated Hollywood spectacles like this.
Have you never done that?
No, weirdly enough, when I've painted the house, not the house, I've painted a room, we've just been arguing, you know, about,
really?
About like, oh, can, oh, you do, you've missed a bit. Oh, you know, it's not so, oh, can you crack on and do it, finish it? There's no dinner. I just spent all day painting painting the house, you know.
I'm sorry. Everyone else is painting each other. That is happening.
Yeah. And then, we didn't even put out a bed. We were just fucking on a mattress. Oh, we ate when we were hungry. Yeah, that's what everyone does, mate. We all ate when we were hungry. You're not special. Oh, let's all fucking go out on a yacht and fuck all the day. Like other people, life is just living, and life is living. It's going to work, and it's a drudge, and it's cracking on. This premises a life whereby... You've got all the money in the world and you can just fuck around and you can fuck the woman you fell in love with when she was a child and you were an old man, and like nothing's sick or wrong, and we're supposed to look at like, ah, this isn't life, mate. It's horrible. It's bullshit.
I don't think you can lay any of this at the feet of the film. This is you unhappy because you've never painted another person while you're painting a wall, you know?
This paint's not coming off. This paint's not coming off this T-shirt. This paint's not coming off this Mogwai T-shirt. What have you done that for? That's not fun.
Exactly. Why would anyone want to paint you? Because that's the reaction they'd get if they tried, right? Whereas if instead someone painted your Mogwai T-shirt and you went, hee-hee-hee-hee-hee, yeah? Maybe you'd have a better life.
Yeah, what if I smushed some food all over their face? This is what love is. Why do these people love each other? Oh, because they knew each other when they were kids. It's another example. We rinsed it in another film, and I can't remember. Was it Life of Pi?
Yes, I think maybe it was.
A Forrest Gump as well. You meet a girl when you're a kid, and then that's it. She's the love of your life.
Yep.
This is absolute fucking horseshit.
You're annoyed that they met each other when they were young and they like each other.
It's because it's not love. It's convenience. And it doesn't mean anything. That's not... It absolutely makes my blood boil because it doesn't reflect what knowing someone is. It's just lazy. Oh, who shall I fall in love with? I know the 8-year-old girl who gets brought around the house. Fucking open your... Expand your horizons, you douchebag. Why is she special? Sorry, why is she special? Why do they love each other? I have no idea. Because the character,
he doesn't
change.
You love your
and
wife?
She's no. Yeah, of course I do.
But no, but I know you know, you think you know why, right? But like the actual reason that you've ended up with your wife is out of your control, right? Like it's not, you might have conscious awareness of things that you like about her, things that you love about her, whatever. But the reason that you're with her is not within your control. It's not within your realm of conscious awareness.
Oh, is that why I feel trapped all the time?
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
I was talking to you earlier about Bildungsroman's, yeah? Which is what I thought it was something other than what it is. I thought that was the literary term for a novel that spans the entirety of a character's life. But as it turns out, from a bit of Googling that we did, it's really just like a significant a period in their life, and often like in a film version, it might be considered like a coming of age story or the story of a person going from childhood into adulthood, right?
I think it's, yeah, I think Bildungsroman is more specific than it's been. Some people online have seemed to have really fucked it. It does seem specifically it's going from being young into young adulthood. It's not just coming of age. It's not a synonym for that. Like, it's not, you know, the Breakfast Club or whatever.
No. And the bill bit refers to the bill of a platypus. So sort of like the hard mouth. Dung, obviously, is the poo. And the Roman that's about the Roman Empire.
Yeah, and that's where the word comes from.
Yeah, yeah. But the reason I raise this is because I applied that term mistakenly to the film, thinking that it was about an entire person's life. What I really meant was I like this film because it spans the character's entire life from birth until the end of the life. But when we spoke about that, you said something that really interested me. You said the film even fails in that scenario because in order for those stories to mean something, the reason people like them is because the main character learns something. And you don't think that Benjamin Button learns anything in the film?
Because his voiceover from the get-go is worldly wise, and he is a borderline sort of Forrest Gump.
Sure.
He's a blank slate.
He's kind of blank and omnipotent at the same time, right?
He's got no discernible character other than he's affable.
He's Joe Black.
Yeah, he's Meet Joe Black. Although, yeah, he's not called Meet Joe Black in the movie Meet Joe Black. Imagine that if he was called Meet Joe Black. That would have been great.
Hi, John. Meet Joe Black. Wait, meet?
Meet?
Is it M-E-E-T or M-E-A-T?
But yeah, so Pitt has obviously got taste for this kind of blank slate character. It's very attractive to be this ethically pristine, morally virtuous, godlike figure who can just observe the world
and ride a motorbike in total safety.
Yeah, his hands aren't dirty.
No,
you know, he can go back and shag an old Kate Blanchett. Yep. You know, even though she's married and had a kid with him who he has abandoned. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not problematic. I'm fine. No, I'm span time. I'm going backwards in time.
Yeah.
Fucking, what a knob end.
But I like that.
So I don't think he does learn anything because he starts off as a blank slate and is he just applies Forrest Gump-isms throughout the movie. So the Bildungsroman, even though we're not really applying that term, that it tends to be you have a character in a state of innocence and then they lose something and then they learn something and then there's another fourth thing. He starts out with nothing. And I guess he's always innocent, but there's no heft to it. There's no struggle. He just walks from bit to bit. History happens around him and the whole thing is a frustration.
That's what I like about it though.
Great, but what does he learn though?
I don't care. I don't think he learns anything. I'm not interested. Like, it doesn't matter to me. You know, like, I don't think, like, I know that you love story structure and it's very important for, like, a person to have an experience and learn something from it. But I like real life where most people don't ever learn anything and life continues to happen anyway because that's how it works, right? That's what I don't for a minute think that the film did this intentionally. So I'm just going to caveat what I'm about to say with that. Big capital letters caveat. I'm not giving the whole crew credit for this. But the reason that it resonated with me and that I liked it was because precisely your point, Benjamin Button doesn't learn anything. He's born as a sort of weird old man. He's instantly an outsider in his own world. He lives in an old people's home, grows up there. He's sort of one of them, right? He has this very strange, unique perspective on life because of his predicament. And he just goes through life and watches people die, watches all of his friends die early on because they're all old people that look like him. His experience of growing up into a man is completely different from a younger person's, like someone aging the normal way, because whenever he meets someone new, their expectations of the life that he's already lived is such that they treat him in an entirely different way than they would treat a 17, 18-year-old boy, right? So he's just a subject to these things happening around him. The world happening around him, the Second World War happening, all these different people living and dying around him. And he just sort of watches it all and none of it makes any fucking difference. And then he's dead at the end of it and it's all completely meaningless. And it doesn't matter whether he loved Cate Blanchett or not. It doesn't matter whether he had the kid or not. It doesn't matter that Cate Blanchett tells her daughter until she's dying or not. It's all entirely irrelevant because life just happened anyway. That's what I really like about the film. I just don't think they did it on purpose.
Well, I think like the whole framing device of Cate Blanchett in a hospital bed, caked under fairly unconvincing age-old makeup, whilst her daughter, played by Julia Ormond, reads Benjamin Bouton's diary to her. That framing device, it's not just that. She's not just reading his diary, to her mum. Hurricane Katrina is going on in the background. And this was the first film that shot in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. So it was quite a big deal. And when you're watching it, you're kind of thinking, why is Hurricane Katrina on in the background? Why is this happening? And at various points I was thinking, oh, yes, because life doesn't care. You know, history happens and we're all nothing.
Yeah.
We're all specks of nothing. And I think otherwise it doesn't make, you know, it doesn't really make a huge amount of sense.
I like specks of nothing. Yeah, okay, then credit where it's due.
I massively waylaid your chat about films that span a lifetime, didn't I? I don't think we even chatted about any other movie.
I've got a list, Adam.
Yes, so have I.
You've got a list as well. Yours isn't from MovieWeb, is it?
No.
Oh, mine's a list I found online. Is yours a list that you've curated yourself?
Yeah, it's from my brain.
Well, can you tell me about some of yours? And I want to see if your list, any of them appear on my list.
Does this have to be... It's not from baby to... death, because that's
no.
It just has to be from very young to quite old, right?
Actually, my list is from movieweb.com, 10 great movies that span the main character's full life. So I guess mine is full life.
Okay, well, I think that's kind of stupid, but I'll talk about the movies that span the interesting bit of a life.
Before you do that, can I just read to you the copy at the very beginning? The first line of this MovieWeb article, it reads, according to data from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the average human life expectancy in the US is 76.4 years. Isn't that such a way to start an article like this, you know, and then think, I've done quite a good job there, haven't I? Because I quoted data from the Center for Disease and Control Prevention, you know.
Yeah, baffling. A baffling choice. Now, I think I can include films that are based on a historical figure. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do that, but I think we'll kind of strike them as we whittle this down to the greats. I think that's a slight cheat. Do you think?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Do it.
So you've got Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Goodfellas, obviously.
Goodfellas is on my list.
Yeah.
I mean, it is his whole life, isn't it, really, kind of? You don't actually know, though, do you? Do you know?
Yeah, it's from 10. You meet him when he's about 8. He's pretty young.
Yeah.
And then, he's a schnook at the end.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the Scorsese's, you could kind of make an argument for a big chunks of The Godfather Part 2, couldn't you?
That's Coppola, not Scorsese.
Oh, my bad.
We'll have to cut you saying that.
No, you don't have to cut me saying that. That's fine. Oh, that's a nice little insight, though, because if you'd said that, we would cut it. But you would never say that.
No, of course not, because they're completely different movies.
Sure, but, you know, Scorsese and Coppola, they're basically the same.
But yeah, for Godfather Part 1 to Part 3 definitely counts.
Yeah.
You know, very young Pacino to very old Pacino.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Life of Pi.
So. Yeah, because you cut to later.
Yeah, he's telling it. He's old Pi when he's telling the story. Forrest Gump, as of course.
Yeah, Gumpo Grumpo. Yeah.
Citizen Kane.
Yeah. I can't get through it. I've never got through it.
You don't have to get through it. Don't worry. These aren't good or bad.
I just mean I've never got to the end, so I don't actually know what happens.
Oh, he dies and says Rosebud.
Right.
He's old. It starts young and he dies old.
He dies old. Okay, yeah.
Chaplin. Do you ever see Chaplin?
Is that with...
Downey Jr.?
No, never seen that one. No.
Oh, that's really, really watchable.
Yeah?
I would really recommend watching Chaplin.
Oh, okay. He doesn't seem watchable to me.
It's so watchable. Anthony Hopkins is the... it's framed. It's got a lovely framing device that was come up with by the scriptwriter William Goldman. A little fact for you. It's framed by Chaplin. He was living out his dotage in Switzerland, and he's talking to his autobiographer, played by Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
So whenever
Anthony
there's
Hopkins.
But he's playing it nice and muted, and whenever he can interject and speed the story up, or slow it down, or jump ahead.
That's pretty good. That's a nice function.
It's a really nice framing device.
Okay.
Amadeus?
Yeah, Amadeus popped up on a couple of lists here, and there I nearly rewatched that the other day.
Oh, no, we were supposed to do that together.
Oh, are we?
We agreed.
Did we?
Yeah.
You're going to have to remind me of these sorts of things, because forgot you forgot, do you know what I'm saying?
Better, much better. So what have you got on this? What have you got on this so-called movie web list?
Well, you mentioned a couple of them already. There's a couple on here that I haven't seen. In at number 10, 2015's Age of Adeline.
Yeah, it's Blake Lively. Never seen it.
Forrest Gump was number 9. You've mentioned that one. The Curious Case of Bonjamon Bujon. That was in at number 8. Number 7, Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood. Do you know what that is?
No, it sounds like Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, but not seen it.
Louisiana native turned New York City playwright Sida Lee Walker is getting married. A success in her professional life, she's been invited to give an interview to Time magazine. Sida makes mention of the fact that her childhood was at times tumultuous, a tidbit that the interviewer runs with into a larger story than Sida implied, sending her dramatic mother, Vivi, into a fit, disinheriting Sida from her will. I mean, this goes on. I won't keep reading it.
That just sounds like a blow-by-blow.
It does sound like a blow-by-blow. I don't know why they've blow-by-blowed it such. In at number 6, I can't recall your relationship with this film, whether it's seen or not seen. Big Fish from 2003?
Not seen.
Oh, it's such a shame, man, because that is canon movie you forgot. Albert Finney is delightful in that film. In at number 5, I reckon you have seen this. It's 2005's Walk the Line. The Johnny Cash, what do they call it?
Biopic.
Biopic, yeah.
That's a forgot you forgot. You could get me that any day of the week.
Really?
Only saw it at the cinema. Didn't care about it. Don't care about it.
Wow.
Not interested.
You didn't even like Reese Witherspoon as June Carter.
I can't remember a thing about it. Just couldn't give a shit.
Fair enough. Okay.
Once you've seen Dewey Cox Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, uh-huh. It's impossible to think of anything else from those movies. All of them. Ray, Walk the Line,
yeah.
Whatever. It's been absolutely lampooned. Just those two. Those are the only two.
Just name one more. Just one more.
Elvis. It came out afterwards.
Was it called Elvis?
Yeah, there's one called Elvis.
What was that one called? The recent Elvis one.
Elvis.
Was
Presley?
It called Elvis? Was it?
What
was the Elvis movie called?
It was called Elvis, mate. It was called Elvis.
It was called Elvis.
I was trying to think of a million Elvis songs.
Yeah.
That would have been a funny headline.
It was called Hound Dog.
Yeah.
The day the dog hounded.
Ain't nothing but a hound dog.
That's yeah.
It was called
Name
Blue
one more?
Suede Shoes.
Yeah, okay. And one more?
Jailhouse Rock.
Oh, there you go. No, that's nice.
It was called Caught in a Trap.
It was called
Suspicious Minds.
I can't walk out.
Now, it was called Fat Cunt Dies on a Fucking Toilet.
Oh, good Lord. In at number four, 1999's Sunshine. With Ralph Fiennes and two other people I recognise, one of whom looks like Orlando Bloom, but it can't be Orlando Bloom, can it? Maybe it is.
No, can't be.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it either. Anyway, number three, The World According to Garp.
Read it. Read it.
You've read it?
Read the book, yeah.
It's got Robin Williams in it. Yeah?
Yeah, that's why I never watched it.
Right.
I remember it's quite a good book by, what's he called? John Irving. Very readable.
Okay, yeah. In at number two, Boyhood from 2014. A film, again, canon movies you forgot. It's going to have to
but
come
it's
up
not,
at some point.
It's not of a life, though, is it?
It's not. No, it's not. It's of, I mean, I guess they've included it because it's a real cheat.
Yeah, but he doesn't die, does he?
No, he doesn't.
Is he
die,
dead
no.
at the end?
No, he's
That'd
not.
Be a great
he's not
ending
even
if he
really
died.
A proper adult at the end.
No.
He's, you know, he's like 20 or something, you know.
It's just a rubbish coming of age story.
It is rubbish. Anyway, in at number one, you've already mentioned it, Goodfellas, which is a terrific film, but also a film I just don't think I will ever watch again, you know. I think I genuinely might never watch it again. I just don't like it, but I understand that it's a brilliant film.
I can't wait for there to have been enough time for me to have passed for me to rewatch that film.
Really?
Perfect.
Wow.
Absolutely perfect film. So funny.
I just think it's all
amazing script, amazing cast, amazing story.
Sure, yeah, agree.
Beautifully shot.
Yeah.
Score's fantastic.
Right, yeah.
It's just peak me, canon me. Tell me something about Goodfellas that'll annoy me.
You want me to tell you something about Goodfellas that'll annoy you? Okay.
Bathroom now. I'll tell you something that annoys me about it is that Ray Liotta,
he's so sweaty.
When you meet him, I think he's supposed to be about 20, and he looks about a million years old.
Yeah,
and he's not age. He doesn't age up throughout the whole movie.
That's in the past, though. In the past, 20-year-olds did look like they were 50. You know, at least that's what I think from watching films.
I think it's kind of admirable that they don't bother with any of that sort of stuff. But when I first saw it as a young impressionable 18-year-old, I was like. In the storyline, he's supposed to be very, very young.
Yeah.
But you have no concept of that because you're looking at a guy who looks like he's 40.
That's right, yeah. Did you go home and look in the mirror and think, when am I going to grow up?
No, because I just always watched it as like, oh, he's 40 now.
Right.
When he's supposed to... I didn't really have a full grasp of the story.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how old were you? 20?
I would have seen Goodfellas actually maybe when I was 15.
Wow. That is formative, isn't it? 15, I guess that's probably when I watched Goodfellas, but not at the time, you know.
That's when you're supposed to watch it. That's when, if you're getting into movies, that's on the list. These are the films to watch.
Yeah, fair.
Should we play the box office game?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to play the box office game. I'd love to. I don't know how you're going to go about this, though. I just say that every week. I do know how you're going to go about it. I'd love to hear from you the prediction for the budget for the case of Benjamin Button, brackets estimated budget, please, on IMDb. It does seem like they've probably had quite a big one.
Because I think this is a kind of an outlier for Fincher. We can come back to Fincher when we chat about maybe Panic Room. Have you seen Panic Room?
No.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah.
Have you forgot? You forgot any Fincher?
Let me have a quick look at Fincher. Hold on. David Fincher.
I've seen every Fincher.
You've seen every Fincher?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And let me tell you, that is 95 Finchers.
No.
Well, David Fincher's directed 95 things.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He's directed 12 things.
So I watched The Killer and I already forgot that. I guess there's a lot of like music videos in this IMDb list and a lot of...
Joe, he's directed 12 films. 12 feature films.
Oh, okay, you're going to have to tell me what they are then, because his IMDb director credits is absolutely chock-a-block with music videos and TV and stuff.
Yeah, so we'll just get rid of that. He directed Alien 3.
Haven't seen it.
First film, Notorious Debacle. But boy, did he bounce back with 7.
What's the... there's a film called Notorious Debacle.
He bounces back big time with 7. You love 7, right?
I really hate 7.
Fuck.
It makes me so unhappy and sad and just icky, and it put me in such a bad mood when I rewatched it earlier this year.
Oof, dear, oh dear.
Yeah.
Okay, The Game with Michael Douglas, that's such good fun. I'd recommend you watching that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Fight Club, of course.
Oh, I've seen Fight Club.
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten it, though. But again, it's not like... It's a terrific film, fantastic film, but it's not quite my tempo, as J.K. Simmons would say.
Right. Fair dues. It's my tempo thoroughly and always has been, always will be.
Yep.
Panic Room.
Yeah, haven't seen it, but I know it was a huge, great big deal when I was a 12-year-old.
It's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love an excuse to rewatch that, but you're not going to give me that. He follows that up with Zodiac.
Right. Haven't seen that either. Yeah.
That is superb.
Yeah. That's got Jake Gyllenhaal in it, right?
That's about the Zodiac murders from the 70s.
Yes.
Jake Gyllenhaal, Mark Ruffalo, Downey Jr. He follows that up with a stinker of Benjamin Button.
Yes, right. Today's
And then
film.
After that, Social Network, you like?
Yeah, I enjoy that film. I think it's good.
And then after that, it's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, I love that film.
Really?
Yeah, I really like that one.
Do you want to get me on that one?
Talk I've about Sprawl. Yeah, I'll get you on that one at some point.
And then he did Gone Girl.
Yes, which I did not like at all.
Which I didn't. And then I rewatched and I appreciated a bit more. They needed Mank.
You could get me on Gone Girl if you want to do Fincher.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
then
the one.
Mank he did for Netflix.
Yeah, I didn't care.
And then most recently, The Killer.
Which I've already forgotten.
You know, I wouldn't mind. Me too. So that's Fincher. He's so well regarded. He's such a great filmmaker, but he is a bit hit and miss.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, more in recent years, it seems, because...
I mean, not miss. Miss is too harsh.
Yeah.
I'd say more like hit and meh, or maybe.
Hit and meh, because it's a very strong list. I mean, of the 12 feature films there, at least 50% of them are very, very good, right? And a few of them are amongst the great films, I would say.
So anyway, he's got to bring it in on a budget. He's got to bring in back to the budget. I think he's going to need...
Now, don't forget, it's Pitt.
Yes, okay, yes, Pitt. But it's still a hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say 90 million.
They say, the last year where they really threw money at hard sells, you know. I didn't quite hear what your guess was because I was talking over you, but...
Yeah, 90 million.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Was it 100? Was it over 100?
It was well over 100.
Okay. Probably more like 150, right?
It was $150 million. Yeah. Brackets estimated budget, which maybe some of it went on the CG, I guess, you know?
I think all of it.
Yeah, I mean, they had those scenes in the water. Maybe they filmed all the boat stuff in a studio, in like a big flooded studio or something. I don't know.
A lot of costumes.
Yeah.
Fincher... He'll shoot take after take after take until he's happy.
Right. Oh, I have heard that about Fincher before. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, that's quite a lot of money, isn't it, to spend on this film?
Yeah, for what it is, that's a stupid amount of money.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's see if it got bums on seats. Opening weekend, US and Canada, December 28th, 2008. It's about to be 2009, and the world is still reeling from the financial crisis. But does that mean that people are looking to go out, sit down at the cinema, and enjoy a little bit of Bildung's Roman Hope, Adam Richmond? What do you think?
Yeah, maybe. I never understand why they release certain movies at Christmas.
Yeah. Americans sometimes try to tell me that Thanksgiving is sort of like their Christmas, but I think Christmas is their Christmas.
No, Americans Thanksgiving is bigger than Christmas.
Right, yeah.
That's what they say.
So maybe it is okay to sort of, you know, maybe they're more likely to go out on December the 20th. I mean, that's New Year's, that's basically nearly New Year's Eve weekend, right? You know, that's, if it's December 28th, that is, picture this, you've had Christmas on, this would be a Thursday or a Friday, right? So you've had Christmas on a Tuesday, you're about to have New Year's Eve the next Tuesday. This is the weekend in the middle, you're off work. Maybe it's prime real estate.
But it's cold. I mean, I know it's not cold everywhere.
It's warm in the cinema.
I don't like going to the cinema in the winter as much. I don't want to get out. Really?
You know, you don't like going out and then you get the feeling of like pulling on your coat and snuggling in. And then when you get in the cinema, you can enjoy the warm, take the coat back off and then walk through the snow and think about the film you saw.
No, I don't like that at all. I like going in when it's really bright, hot summer.
Right.
And everyone's outdoors.
And there's aircon in there. Yeah.
Not for the aircon. It's because I'm doing what everyone else isn't doing.
Right, yeah.
You know, I don't want to seek warmth when it's cold.
Right. That's why I always thought it would be better to give up smoking during the summer so that I didn't have to join everyone else in the beer garden. Because there's nothing worse than being a smoker and sitting in the beer garden of the pub all through the winter. There's no one there. You're having a great time. Maybe there's a heater if it's a good pub, you know, and no one's bothering you and you can talk as loudly as you want. And you can smoke everywhere. And then come summertime, suddenly all these people who were inside the whole time are now outside and they're sitting at my table and there's nowhere for me to sit. And they throw weird looks at me when a bit of smoke comes near them because obviously there's a health concern there and I understand that. But it is a pub beer garden. And do you know what I mean? I can't wait until October comes around and they fuck off back inside and leave me alone again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know. I've had friends who... They were all smokers and I was the only non-smoker.
Yeah.
And I was forced to be outside in the freezing cold.
You didn't like that, did you?
All winter.
No.
Should we stay inside for one time? Should we give a shit about the guy who doesn't want to smoke? No. Always, let's all just do what smokers want.
And now we just don't catch the pub or hang out anymore.
Yeah, it's worked out wonderfully for me. I just drink cans and record podcasts.
Yes, yes. But about how many bums do you think did get on the seats? Because Americans love the snow, you know? They love getting out in the cold.
This kind of flick, I don't know, like 2 million?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hell of a lot more than that. It is. But this film took $27 million on its opening weekend.
Jesus, that's jumper territory.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, really big.
For a 2-hour 45...
Yeah.
But, I mean... They've spent 150 mil.
Sure.
They would have marketed it up the yin-yang.
Uh-huh.
This is your romantic flick.
Yeah.
Special effects.
It's Pitt and Blanchett. Well, we're going to come now to gross worldwide.
Well, I think it was fairly well reviewed. It's made 27 million. 27? 28?
Mm-hmm. 27.
27. I think the factor of 10 applies. Mm-hmm. Not much more. Maybe just under, if anything.
Uh-huh.
The runtime will dissuade some folk.
Sure.
So actually, let's bring it down a bit to a factor of under 10. Maybe it makes 230 million.
Well, let me tell you, Adam Richmond, David Fincher surpasses all expectations once again because the film made $335 million.
Wow.
Nearly 36.
Factor of 10.
Yeah. Factor of, I would say, factor of 12. Factor of 12 and a half. Very impressive. It overperformed its XG, this film. Well done to everyone involved.
Absolutely. Uh, Should we play the... Hey. Should we play the game where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot? Although actually, technically, it's a list of films the other person forgot they forgot to catch them out on a movie they forgot.
I'd love to do that. I think it's... Is it my go this week? No, because I got you with The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, didn't I? It's your go.
I'm gonna Golden Duck plum you.
Golden Duck, off the bat.
Yeah, I'm just going to do it. And I know... Actually, I know one. I'll be a bit more interesting.
Hey, Golden Duck. You can't call Golden Duck and then not hit me. Come on.
Okay.
Where's the stones behind those bones? Let's hit it.
Signs.
Shyamalan.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Do you know, if you'd said The Village, I would have said that's not Plum, but I might have been into it. But Signs, I don't think I've thought about Signs for a very long time. And also, I believe I've only seen Signs once. Maybe twice. That's a long time ago.
Special kind of Plum when you've only seen it once. That's so rare because, even Jumper, you'd seen five times.
I think Signs scared me a bit. I only watched the Ghosts one. What's that one called?
Oh, Sixth Sense.
I only watched that once as well because that really scared me.
I only saw Signs when it came out of the cinema.
You haven't rewatched it either?
Never rewatched it.
Okay, fine. It's Big Mel, right?
Big Mel?
Is this the debut for Mel?
Debut for Mel, but it's also Joaquin Phoenix returns.
Joaquin Phoenix is in Signs?
Yeah, if you forgot that.
Who does Joaquin Phoenix play in Signs?
See, I never pegged this.
The older son.
Right. It's not his elder son. It's not an older son. He's Mel Gibson's brother.
What? Is he? I genuinely did not know that. I, A, forgot that he was in Signs, and then I, B, forgot that he was the brother.
Yeah, no, I remember watching it thinking, he's the elder son? And then... Yeah, reading review afterwards. It's like, no, he's the younger brother. He's 20 and Mel Gibson's about a million in it.
Mel Gibson's got the Ray Liotta disease, has he?
He does.
Well, I guess thinking about it now, it's kind of like the prototype Interstellar, isn't it? So it'll be interesting to watch it with that perspective.
Why is it the prototype's Interstellar?
Because it's set on a farm and it's got aliens in it.
Ah, yeah, cornfield.
Yeah, the original cornfield sci-fi. Great.
But yeah, there we go. That was the Curious Case of the Benjamin Button episode. You've been listening to the Movies You Forgot podcast
with Adam, the co-host.
Me, the co-host. Joe, the co-host. Say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.